Happy Baby Friday. Let's shift the vibes this morning. It's a new day. It's a new game, Justin.
The intensity, I think, will drop off a little bit for us. I hope it doesn't for the Toronto Maple Leafs, though. I guess I'm already there. Waking up this morning, seeing headlines like Leon, in brackets, Draisaitl, the great. Some big performances across the NHL last night.
A major bounce back night.
We're waiting on one in this city, right?
In the NHL. It can be done. It will be done at Scotiabank Arena tonight.
It will be done?
I think it will be.
Is that a Mark Messier guarantee?
No, nothing. It's a guarantee.
Nothing of the sort.
Besides the Islanders, who lost an OT, series are all tied up last night. Panthers smashed the Bruins on their home ice. Stars, big 7-3 victory over the Wild. The Oilers, though, they came out with something to prove after losing to the Kings in game one. Maple Leafs should have just, well, not stayed up late. Should rewatch that game today and say, we'll just play like the Oilers.
I don't even want the whole team to watch it. I want two guys to watch two players. I want Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews to watch Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. It is proof. And if you can watch any game last night, every game last night illustrated that there is another level to get to. There are two steps that you need to go to. And really what we saw from the Maple Leaf Stars is one step back. One step back against anybody, not going to cut it. Two steps up, that's what's required in the postseason. That's what we've seen from, that's what we saw. Even the New York Islanders showed that last night. They lost, they're going down 2-0. They're going back to Long Island down 2-0. But every team that had pressure played well and put in an effort and responded. Maple Leafs don't want to be the only team that doesn't respond. The expectations should be something along the lines of what we saw yesterday from maybe a team like Florida. Like, how about being unafraid? Florida Panthers have, I'd say, gone into that series and played the Boston Bruins evenly after probably not deserving even to make the playoffs, like really having a brutal season against a historically great season. Guys like Matthew Tkachuk stepping up, Brandon Montour stepping up, your guy Alex Lyon really, really well, undeterred, staring into cameras on his way in.
He's mean mugging, eh? He's got a level of confidence that, God, I don't know where he's created that in the lab, but he's...
Ivy League. That's how you get that confidence, no?
Big Yale Bulldogs.
Big time performances, next level stuff. And if you're not at the next level, you're at an inferior level.
What are you, the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, not in the
Maple Leafs should head down to Rogers Center, take a banner from the Blue Jays all over Bremner Street, bring it in their locker room, and go next level tonight.
Adopt the hashtag.
Maybe not last night's Blue Jays performance, but in general.
Maybe Jose Barrios' performance. We'll get into that a little later.
There you go.
That was good. It was quality. It's exciting. Encouraging.
There's always one little, well, not even little. There's been some bright spots with the Blue Jays pitching over the last little stretch. Minus Manoa.
The heart is either warm or like bitterly cold every morning because it's one or the other.
Nonetheless, we've got a big game to tee up tonight. Game two, Maple Leafs, Tampa Bay Lightning, 7 p.m. puck drop back to normal. Ain't no more 30 minutes of anxiety. Maybe that's why they came out nervous. They had to sit for 30 extra minutes in that locker room and they had to change their schedule around a little bit and
retake their stick. And they're just waiting, like an extra 30 minutes just sitting
there.
That's
what we missed.
I'm sure, actually, that the Toronto Maple Leafs knew what time the game started. But, I mean, I guess by performance,
maybe not.
They were real late.
All right, so we'll get through how we feel moving forward because it's, you know, flip the script. What's in the past is in the past. They got one day in between game one and game two. They were out on the ice yesterday during practice, had some opportunities to talk to the media, see how it's settled for them about, I don't know, 18 hours later. We saw new lines. We also got information about Michael Bunting. Now, this is surprising because I set the over-under at 1.5 yesterday for suspension, and I went over because I thought 2 was maybe possible, and I like to be right when it comes to me versus you, so you went under. We were both wrong, as it is a 3-game suspension for Michael Bunting after he received the match penalty and the game misconduct. He did leave Tuesday's game with 4 minutes and 20 seconds remaining. Oh, it's 4:20 today, too.
There you go. You got unreasonably excited about that.
Well, I remember seeing it yesterday, and then, oh, it's 4:20. So
Happy 420 to those who celebrate.
As you'd like. 420 remaining in the second period, Micah Bunting was ejected from the game, and he will now miss 3 games for his illegal hit to the head and interference on Eric Chernak. So, our initial thoughts when that came through?
Excessive. I mean, I was on the under. I mean, you can do this like little playoff math thing where you go, okay, so it was a 2-game suspension in the playoffs, which means it's a 4-game suspension in the regular season. If you want to apply that, which I don't know if you can really apply that and it means anything.
Why is that the case?
I don't really know.
Yeah, like, that's just like a made-up thing that we're all
I feel like there's
thinking.
Like a monetary penalty. I should know. Monetary penalty, obviously, in the regular season, not in the playoffs.
Why?
Well, they don't get paid in the playoffs. I guess.
So?
It's very strange. Like, it's all tied to what your, like, biweekly pay. Like, you're so a normal dumb. Person when you're really not a normal person. So it's kind of strange that way. But I guess because it's much more of a harsh penalty. Like, if you miss 8 regular season games, who really cares? If you miss 4 playoff games, it could be the difference mm-hmm. between your team winning and losing a series.
It could be
and it's massive.
It could be the rest of your playoff time as well.
It could be the rest of your tenure here at the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It could be a lot of things on the 3 games.
So I'm not sure why the math applies that way, but if you want to apply that math, we're talking a 6-game suspension regular season. If you want to look at, hey, you missed basically the entire game, aside for 4 minutes and 20 seconds in the second period and the first period, is that like akin to an 8-game suspension for someone with no suspension history? I know he's like got a pretty detailed portfolio or file on hand in terms of like how he acts regularly. But it seemed like a guy with no precedent, no history, no rap sheet gets really, really hit hard for something that I thought was stupid and mm-hmm. obviously dangerous because Eric Cernak's going to miss game two, inconsequential because Eric Cernak's going to miss game two. But I didn't think it was like predatory. I thought it was more stupid than it was predatory.
Yeah.
And I look
I think
at
it
Matt
was
Dumba's
reckless.
Hit. Reckless, yes, for sure.
And you could see there's a level like just he was frustrated. So it's certainly an illegal play. It was certainly something that affected this player's 1 game or 2 games. And I wonder how much that goes into it too. Like, do you wait to find out how long Chernak's going to be out before you lay the suspension down? Is that an extra game because he's out for at least 1 game?
It definitely goes into it.
3 is a lot. 2 would have been fine.
I thought 1 would have been perfect. He already basically missed a game.
He missed a period in 4 minutes.
Yeah, and got a 5-minute major. Like, there's a lot of stuff. This is a 5-minute major that buried you. So, very costly in
True.
One game. You're not around for the rest of that game. So, that's a double whammy. Now you're missing 3 more games.
No, it's a lot.
I think it's pretty excessive for a guy who doesn't do this on the reg. And if I look at, like, okay, who's trying to concuss someone? You look at Matt Dumba's hit on Joe Pavelski in game 1 of Minnesota-Dallas. Even though that was, quote-unquote, a clean hit, that one was with malicious intent. He was trying to hurt Joe Pavelski, for sure. He was trying to do it in a clean fashion, but I believe in my heart of hearts that Matt Dumba, intent to injure, if we want to intent to injure O-meter, was higher than Michael Bunting's, who is kind of out of control of his body.
He's trying to, like, muck stuff up.
Trying to gain some body position, mm-hmm. and it got away from him. I frankly was surprised. I was surprised in the moment that it was a 5-minute major. So maybe I'm way, way, way off on this. But, I mean, I've covered a lot of suspensions and clean and dirty hits in my time, and this one didn't strike me as something where it's like, this guy clearly wanted to, victimize someone. Like, really wanted to put someone into the ground. That's not mm-hmm. what it felt like to me.
I agree. And I think most of Leafs Nation, and if you look at that tweet from NHL Player Department of Safety or whatever, man, that thing is getting ratioed. It is getting blown up because a lot of people are in the same boat. 3 games seems like a lot when you're listening to like the speculation on the panel and our shows. It was like, oh, I could see like 1, maybe 2. So 3 seems like a lot. 3 seems like a lot for a guy that has no documented history. He has been suspended before. Or sorry, my mistake. He's been fined previously for mm-hmm. diving, but he has never been suspended. And yeah, he doesn't have a history of going out, like you mentioned, with an intent to injure. But there is the Michael Bunting tax that I think we are going to try to decipher over the next little while.
I think you suspended the reputation. I think you wanted your pound of flesh because you, like apparently the officials are exasperated by this guy. You don't like Michael Bunting. So you took your opportunity. That's
it's
what
a dangerous precedent to set, though. Like, if you look at the rule book, if you were to look at what is the past comparables, right? Nobody in my brief look back, has been suspended for 3 games for something of this magnitude, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go through the the annals of history, but...
Okay, well, in my recent memory, mm-hmm. right, I haven't seen a hit to the head in this situation, which was, you know, an interference, which they write the word interference as well. It wasn't a hit from behind into the boards, etc. That was given 3 games. So now looking forward to the rest of the playoffs, there's been some missed calls. There's been some significant injuries or areas of concern on the ice that have been missed. So what is the precedent for the rest of the NHL playoffs? Are you going to be suspending players based on their reputation? What if Evander Kane does something just like this? Is Evander Kane getting
Evander Kane
4 games?
Shoved Nazem Kadri mm-hmm. into the boards from behind, yep. broke his hand, and got 1 game, I believe.
One game. So look at that. That's recent history too. Evander Kane.
That's a more dangerous play. You can break someone's neck with that play.
Broke Nazem Kadri's wrist with a hit where they were. I watched this last night on Twitter. Everybody is being Twitter sleuths, which I appreciate because it's a lot easier for me to do the work. Where they're posting video side by side with what Michael Bunting did. And yeah, it's different. It's a different situation, but that was a more dangerous play. You broke the guy's wrist. He could have, as you said, broke his neck. He got 1 game suspension. And Evander Kane is a much darker past for being a guy with an, quote, intent to injure or, quote, more dangerous style of hockey than Michael Bunting. So I'm just curious of how things go moving forward. If this is the precedent that the NHL is setting for the rest of the playoffs, is this the Michael Bunting tax that we just saw? Kind of feels like the latter.
You'd hope the justification is, because I think it's the only argument, that Eric Cernak is, you know, pretty concussed, like really not feeling good, really not doing well, not going to be around in Game 3 and Game 4.
What if he is around Game 3?
It'd be probably, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, like, I don't think Michael Bunting means enough to the Maple Leafs that John Cooper would be like, hey, voluntarily, we'll take Cernak out for game 2 so we can hopefully run Bunting suspension through 4 games.
Especially if Victor Hedman's out.
Especially if Victor Hedman's out. And if we're looking at the state of the defense corps right now.
It's rough.
Mikhail Sergachev, Darren Radish, Ian Cole, Nick Perbix, Zach Bogosian, Hayden Fleury. Those would be the 6 defensemen for the Tampa Bay Lightning if Hedman can't go mm-hmm. and if Cernak, which who has been ruled out for game 2, aren't in the lineup, aren't options for those 2. We're looking at, you know, something far from a Stanley Cup winning defensive core. Not to say that, you know, they can't get it done against the Toronto Maple Leafs, because they can. But this is not a good defense group. This is a severely, severely undermanned group. And again, Michael Bunting does not mean enough to the Maple Leafs where you would voluntarily put yourself in that position. So I assume Cernak is pretty banged up, and they took that as the most like key bit of evidence when putting together a case against Michael Bunting.
And I think somebody asked in the text line here, do you think he got 3 games because Cernak has a concussion and they're trying to get rid of like concussions in the game? I'm a Leafs fan. I don't have a problem with suspension. It was a play that didn't need to happen and caught him hard in the head. And I agreed. It did not need to happen. It hit him in the head. And I mean, maybe it is the Cernak is going to be out for the remainder of the playoff round, right?
That's
quick to diagnose that after what, 12 hours.
But maybe they've been like, okay, he's going to be out for 7 days. Mm-hmm. Like there's like a minimum requirement protocol, whatever.
Maybe.
And if it's 7 days, that encompasses 3 days and you're trying to, you know, even up, you know, the consequences of the hit. I will say based on that question though, you said Evander Kane's play was more dangerous. I do believe it was, mm-hmm. but if you were talking about the result, I guarantee the NHL cares more about a concussion than a broken wrist.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
Or a broken finger, or whatever.
So if that's the precedent, this is where it comes. Like, if this is the precedent you're setting for any head checks this playoff round, this playoff all the way till the Stanley Cup final, then sure. You know, like, that's fine. Let's see. It's early on in round 1. We've seen some things missed. I like consistency and how things are reffed on the ice and how decisions are made off the ice. So we won't see Michael Bunting for the next 3 games.
And that is the most frustrating thing, I think, if you're a fan that like is like in tune with what other things are going on. Like it feels like, okay, we spun the wheel and it landed on 3 and we're like, okay, and, like, that's what we're going with, NHL. Like that's kind of how it feels. And I guess they could help themselves if they were just a little bit more detailed in explanations. For a while there, they just weren't explaining themselves at all. I think they've gotten out of that just a little bit.
You want to hear what they said?
Go for it.
This is an illegal check to the head delivered to a player who has no reason to anticipate any contact, let alone contact with sufficient force to cause an injury.
Okay, sufficient force. I mean, I think you need a little speed to create sufficient force, maybe. Maybe sufficient is sufficient.
Well, and they do mention to cause an injury. So certainly the amount, the injury is part of the discussion of why it's three games.
But that's like the same thing. Like if there's blood on a high stick, it's 4 minutes. Like why is blood the determining factor on whether a high stick is 2 or 4 minutes? Blood.
I always thought like, that was strange.
If it just like hits your, like a light high stick, which is crazy to say.
A light high stick.
Like a bit of an oxymoron. But if a stick clips you a little bit, mm-hmm. edge of the tooth, pierces skin, but you get absolutely like walloped in the cheek and it's just like the way you were hit. Mm. Like it doesn't make sense to me.
Interesting.
It should be a judgment call, though we'd be debating judgment calls until the end of time. So maybe that's why they put in the no blood or blood rule. But the blood or no blood rule is just absolutely silly.
So with Michael Bunting out for the next three games and maybe more, depending on how things go, new look lines at Maple Leafs practice yesterday. And also we didn't hear from Michael Bunting, which makes sense. We didn't really hear anything from the coaching staff or players because the suspension came after their media and their skate. So probably won't hear about that because I'm sure tonight they'd like to ask about the game and not about Michael Bunting. Here's the new lines. This obviously isn't confirmed, but we did get to see a little taste of what might happen. Yarncroke, Matthews, Marner on that top line. Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander, second line.
Back again.
Third line, Nyes, O'Reilly, Achari, followed by fourth line of Aston Reese, Camp, and Lafferty. Rookie Matthew Nyes making his playoff debut at Scotiabank Arena, his Scotiabank Arena debut as well, in a must-win game.
Yeah, okay, so what was my key to the series? Steady hand, don't make lineup adjustments. Now,
oh, we did say they get a free pass to do something because they're going to have to bring in a body. Yeah.
Sheldon Keefe had no choice to adjust, but honestly, I think you could make the argument that he's already done too much. Like, we expected Yarncroke and Matthews and Marner to play together.
You had to
replace Bunting. There you go.
For the rest of the
Which
series.
Means there's a change to the third line already. And maybe, out of necessity, you have to drop O'Reilly down to play with Matthew Nyes because you need some semblance of care and caution.
Veteran presence.
It does make all the sense in the world. But now we're left with the second line, which is another key for me that is
unchanged, based
on last year. Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander, something that has historically been a nightmare, something that has not worked in the past, something that they were avoiding actively to start the playoffs last year, is now the second line for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The definition of insanity, hoping that something new or different will happen with, you know, the same tactics. Well, we have the same tactic from Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They were trying and doing everything they could to help John Tavares to have something different from that second line. And again, after one game, it devolves back into what it once was. Frankly, it's concerning. Maybe you get enough out of that third line where it's so different, that's your second line. But to me, I look at Kerfoot, Tavares, Nylander, and I can't help but cringe.
I mean, and I totally understand that feeling because we've seen it, and in the past, it hasn't happened, and that's that definition of insanity. But I like Nyes and O'Reilly. I think Nyes needs something, some level of support. He's about to come into this big moment, right? Like, if we're expecting him to be the reason the Maple Leafs win a playoff series, we are in for a sad reality. But I want him to be at least somewhat of a plus performer or an even performer. And I think he needs O'Reilly. And I have been kind of on the boat since O'Reilly joined of having some depth down the center. It does kind of take away from a top six look because, yeah, Kerfoot is Kerfoot. Mm-hmm. But I think it's what I expected when I saw Michael Bunting going out and Matthew Nyes coming in for him to have a third line opportunity with O'Reilly. But I see your point, and I feel the same level of anxious anticipation for how line two looks tonight.
And I, like you, don't think there's really any other way. Mm-hmm. Although I do think accounting for Nyes could potentially be damaging. Like, who was the best player for the Maple Leafs in game one?
Ryan O'Reilly.
And if you don't trust Matthew Nyes, are you seeing a little less of Ryan O'Reilly
it's so true.
In the game,
you
right?
You shouldn't be trying to protect and amplify your college player who's coming in for his first ever NHL moment in the playoffs and trying to like elevate him and at the same time maybe like losing impact elsewhere, but I don't know what else you do.
Isn't that sort of emblematic of everything?
Yeah,
where you're like
100%.
Trying not to lose. You're trying to not have Matthew Nyes hurt you.
And you could be trying to win.
You're not trying to win. Well, we talk about that. You're playing not to lose. You always lose. Play not to lose is the worst position you could be in.
So playing to win would be what for you?
Is it Matthew Nyes on the top line instead of Yarncroke? I honestly don't know what it is. Like, I don't know.
No way.
Why not, though?
Because Yarncroke and Matthews looked good. Like, that's a proven sample size.
Yes.
Matthew Nyes on the top line to start his playoff. Oh, yeah, I'm sweating.
I don't think I have a better answer.
Can you imagine, though, if we came in this morning and Keith was like, oh, putting Matthew Nyes on the top line.
It would at least be a message to this, the second, third, and fourth line that we want this to be unchanged and we trust on you guys to go get it done.
Yeah, I see that.
That would be the only thing. Like, the option would be Kerfoot has a pretty short leash and Ryan O'Reilly goes over the boards 1.5 times compared to everybody else.
And that could still happen, right?
Like,
the deployment of how this works, yeah, it's written down on paper, and Sheldon Keefe did say, hey, don't read too much into it. I'm like, well, it's kind of the only time we have to read into anything before you step on the ice tomorrow for warm-ups.
Yeah, no, it's important that he said that, although he said things like that before, and it's like, oh, those are the lines.
I do think that the playing to win versus playing not to lose was one of the major reasons why they started the way they did. We saw early on the line matching that almost made it feel like Tampa had the home ice advantage. And Sheldon Keefe was at hand for a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And tonight, it needs to be a completely different approach. If you don't get shot out of a cannon to start tonight's game, like, it is a must win. It sounds crazy to say that. It's game two. But if you go down 0-2 down to Tampa for two games on the road, I honestly don't think you can win the series. I'm sorry.
It's curtains. Curtains.
It's really tough. And yeah, there's still a percentage chance. I understand math. But, like, the wind is out of your sails. You are crawling into Tampa Bay. The stakes will be so high, and they are tonight. And I wonder, and like, one of the major things that when I was listening to media, the post media, again yesterday, and then kind of break it down, was the fact that they are admitting to nerves. There should be, like, tonight is a bigger game. I'm sorry. It is, like, even more on your plate. If you were nervous for game one, where it was an even 0-0, nothing, nobody had any stats, it was a series that was in your grasp. Now it is a must-win game. If this one doesn't get you nervous, like, I don't know my level of confidence that they can just be like, oh, I'm like steady and I'm coming in with like such a level of confidence. Like, you admitted to being nervous for game one. This is a bigger game, right? So I get a little bit anxious about that.
Who stuck out in terms of saying they were nervous?
Well, Sheldon Keefe did say, like, oh, I think there's a little bit of nerves. And, you know, the guys were like, you know, they were... whatever, I don't want to put words into his mouth. Yeah. He alluded to nerves. Samsonov alluded to nerves. And I believe there might have been maybe something from Tavares that, like, didn't say, like, we were confident. Like, you know, we were battling some
sometimes it's like, okay,
stuff.
You're asked if you're nervous. And you're like, yeah, you know, like, are you really saying, though, are you nervous? Like, or are you just kind of, like, trying to answer the question?
You could say, no, we shouldn't have nerves.
Yeah, but apparently we don't get any truth from them in postgame. Like, the Tavares postgame was so disappointing, right? Like, it's just, can we say something honest? Like, the O'Reilly one was, again, and we're banging the drum on O'Reilly, but, like, he's the only one that's different. He's the only one not involved in the stench that this organization has built up over time.
And if you listen to his postgame compared to anybody else, he had just a different tone. He's like, yeah, no, like, that was unacceptable. We got to come back. Like, we need to play better. We need to flush this. Like, it's a new game. It's a one game. Like, it's a long series. Like, he was already ready to be like, nope, we're moving forward. Mm-hmm. He wasn't mopey. He was, like, passionate about that sucked, but we are a better team than this. Didn't talk about the, like, moment being too big. Like, it was just...
The walls weren't closing in on him yet.
Yeah.
The walls closing in on the other ones because they understand.
Including Samsonov, which makes me a little bit anxious, right?
Yeah, and again, to your point of nerves, like, I don't know how you could not be more nervous tonight. Because what's the reaction tonight? It's twofold. It's double. It multiplies. It's way, 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 way worse than losing game one. And game one was pretty bad. Mm-hmm. We're booing after 20 minutes. We're booing after 40 minutes. We're walking out with 10 minutes left in the game. Like, it was bad. And I don't know how you could not think about the consequence if it's bad again. And this is the thing with this team. Like, there's a DNA thing. There's a genetic makeup. There is the composition of this group. There is something that needs to be changed because clearly they cannot understand the magnitude or where they have to go. And that's where I was kind of thinking, like, okay, maybe it's not nerves because they weren't nervous in game one last year. And they should be nervous tonight, not two nights ago. Maybe they were complacent. Maybe they were like, look at our team now. Look at how well we played.
And
now.
That makes me sick.
Like, maybe we don't have to go to another level. Honestly, I'm starting to believe in that more and more.
If you are complacent, that is tenfold worse for me than being nervous. Nervous means you understand the stakes. Like, you are coming out there, like if you get nervous before a job interview, you get nervous before you come on the show, it's because you give a crap about it.
Let's say you're nervous for a job interview. Do you like fail to string a sentence together or do you just play?
I don't know. I've crushed every job interview I've ever had.
There you go. Do you just like start talking and everything's cool? Like I get nerves before. I don't get nerves affecting performance to the extent.
Sorry that you're like titanium soul over there.
You just said that you're fine.
I'm joking.
I'm just saying like, okay, maybe it does.
No. For me, this is the difference
between. But once you get going, you're going. That's what I kind of don't understand. So, and I get Samsonov because you're like, if you're really jittery, a goaltender, maybe it affects things. But like once you start playing, once you get into the game, once you hit someone, like
I agree.
How does it affect
example
you that much?
Is like my first Tim and Friends hit. I was nervous. Like I remember sitting there like 10-9. I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to go on national TV. And as soon as they started talking, you just get into a level of comfortability. But nerves are different than being complacent. And if you're telling me that the Maple Leafs were complacent coming into game one, it's like they're entitled. They thought they were going to win. They think their team's better. They think that we earned home ice advantage and we've been coasting ourselves in playoffs. That is literally 10 times worse to me than being nervous, because nervous is like, I care about this thing. I want to perform well, but I have some jitters. Like, let's get through the jitters. Complacent sucks. Like, okay, complacent is a identity issue.
If we're doing TV analogies, here's maybe the broadcasting version of what we saw. If you're doing Tim and Friends for the first time, do you over-prepare?
Definitely.
Do you put so much in your brain because like, you want to be smart?
I want to be ready for everything.
And you want to like, okay, this is what I'm going to say. And then they ask you a different question to start and you're fumbling because you're preparing to do that. Maybe that's what happened. And we were talking about yesterday, overwhelmed by information. We saw that line change, 30 seconds in? That, upon rewatch, that's not something we talked about enough yesterday. Sheldon Keefe is galaxy braining. You just trust your guys, for God's sake. Like, it's honestly, it's too much. I get lineup matching, but how about let's figure out what it looks like on the ice before we start line matching to the death.
I agree.
Like I hated that. Absolutely hated that. And maybe that's it. Too much information, thinking about too much. Maybe that's what explains it more than anything else, because I get it. If, you know, if what we saw from Keefe is a snapshot of what he's doing behind the scenes, then yeah, I bet Justin Hall's thinking about a million things before the game starts.
So now game two, maybe that level is gone because you've done one game. You've been out there, you've skated on the ice, you started this playoff march, and you're behind. But the game was so miserably, terribly bad that maybe it's honestly easier. And I'm selling this story to myself that it's easy to be like, we'll just do everything that we did not do. Like, we will forget about that garbage. We will come out, shot out of a cannon, like Edmonton Oilers did. Our best players will be the best players on the ice. We don't have to worry about the Bunting thing is gone. He's gone. Bye-bye. You have a new face in the lineup. You know what you're doing. Like, you've started. You're done with game one. You come into game two and it's a different, fresh face. Like, I do believe that that's a method that could work for the Maple Leafs, but you're right. It's the nerves. It's the pressure that is going to be amplified in game two, that if you can't handle that, and you couldn't handle it in game one, and it only gets bigger and bigger and bigger as the stakes go by, what do you think you're going to not be nervous for round two, round three, Stanley Cup playoffs? It's like, you got to get over that. You got to be a vet. You got to be a pro.
Yeah, and if you take game two, there's going to be no...
Every single game.
Yeah, there are no moments where it's going to be just like cool. Like, you're not going to not feel that.
And maybe that's where the Tampa Bay Lightning had an edge, because they've done this, and maybe it's that championship pedigree. I don't know how much that counts.
I think the championship pedigree is just, we're just going to play. We're just going to play.
Well, they also don't have demons and ghosts like hanging from the rafters and tarot cards that said that their lives are basically going to be stabbed in the back with 10 swords face down on a red cloak.
Again, it doesn't determine the future. It gives you a glimpse into the future.
Anyway.
Yeah. Like, ultimately, it comes down to this, though. If Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander and John Tavares, and I'm not expecting John Tavares to play like Leon Draisaitl, but if they can't find and uncover something different, ultimately it's going to catch up to you. Because I look around the NHL and I just see elevated performance after elevated performance. And if you're not elevating, you're slipping.
Yep. It's the playoffs for a reason. You can't coast your way through the regular season. And you know what? We talked about this for a month before the playoffs started. Was there a level of complacency? There's that word again. The Maple Leafs had already locked up who they're playing since literally August of last year. And
we're going to spend 3 months game planning for every specific situation.
That would be so miserable if that's the way that this goes, where they just weren't playoff ready. It is game two. There's a completely different, fresh sheet of ice out there. It's going to start at 7 p.m. tonight. We also have the game. We'll have Leafs Nation post-game with Brent Gunning and Gord Stellick, pre-game and post-game. You can catch that here on 590. We're going to have Gunner on at 7 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little preview with him.
The biggest Michael Bunting backer
I cannot wait to see how he spins this. I'm sure he's listening right now. Gunner, get ready.
I don't know. Can you spin it anymore?
The ship has sailed.
We got to quickly on Samsonov. Has the ship sailed there?
No.
Like in terms of a playoff performer? Another thing we didn't really...
You know what?
We talked about it a little bit, but looking at the numbers yesterday...
See, that's what surprised me. We never talked about... I don't know if I just dropped the ball. I didn't know his playoff numbers were that bad.
Yeah.
We never once on this radio station said that he was 1-6 in playoffs. Now, I knew that he wasn't in big stake moments,
but
I didn't know it was that bad.
It's actually even worse because he's got 9 appearances and 8 starts. In the 8 starts, like he had 17 saves on 17 shots in the period or in the non-start mm-hmm. appearance in the playoffs. So the numbers are actually in his starts 1-7, 29 goals against for an average of 3.625 goals and an .888 save percentage lifetime in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if you're talking about nerves.
How many years is that over?
I believe three.
Like three playoff runs there.
Three playoff runs. So he's never really been the guy in mm-hmm. a series. Like he was removed, I think, when he did start. And then he had some fill-in role. And he may have came in late mm-hmm. in the series. Like he's never been able to hold it down, which is the reason he's a Toronto Maple Leaf. But if anyone's like thinking about, wow, like everything's kind of on me and I haven't been able to do it yet, it's Samsonov.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone could be better. But if Samsonov isn't, and I was frankly shocked, more shocked about the Joe Wall discussion than the Michael Bunting three games.
What Sheldon Keefe said also post-game? Well,
Jeff Merrick led his show asking Ellie about if we're going to see Joseph Wall. And I'm like,
my God,
we just, and a lot of people are talking about it. Like we just went through this year and I get the record. The record speaks for itself. Maybe he's just not that guy. But we talked all year about how he proved it. He won the role.
He did.
And one start. Against the backdrop of a bad record already, and we're already talking about making that move. Like, if he allows 6 goals again tonight, then yeah, I mean, it's desperation time.
Here's a fun
question. But I think he deserves more than one start.
If Samsonov and Matt Murray were your two goaltenders right now, and all things were equal, would Matt Murray start tonight?
If Murray didn't get hurt 17 times, and Murray played to the level that he did, which was not as good as Samsonov, but adequate...
But serviceable.
He might have been in tonight, honestly.
I thought about that question all day.
Oh, Matt Murray, what could have been?
Not that I want that, folks. I just think it's an interesting thought process. You can workshop that in your brain today when you're at the water cooler. Ask your buddy, hey, if you're Sheldon Keefe, would you be putting Murray in, all things equal? I'll spark some debate. For me, no, because Samsonov was the proven entity down the stretch. And yes, his numbers are yucky. But Joseph Wall is a kid who's never played in the playoffs except for last game in mm-hmm. the third period. If we're seeing Joe Wall, it's bad, bad, bad news. I'm sorry. The guy seems like an absolute gem. But no. He's not the option.
And maybe it may be my, like, my keys coloring my opinion. But again, I think... If you're so anxious to make a move, you are spreading your own anxiety on everyone else. You're saying, I don't believe in this. So should I believe in this? Our coach doesn't believe in us. Our coach is so desperate to make changes because he saw a collection of shifts and is immediately trying to make the move.
Mm-hmm.
Sheldon Keefe he's just way too antsy for me. And he showed it last year. He got outcoached. And within 1 minute in game one, he's pulling the trigger, and he's getting out coached because immediately the guys that he wanted to get away from on the Lightning came back out.
That's why you win home ice advantage. I can't believe that you would throw that away so early.
So you can just be like, oh, I'm going to have Matthews against anyone. What am I worried about? And instead, we got a bunch of bottom 6 shifts to start the game, and we know what happened to start the game.
This is what it comes down to. And they played not to lose, and that's the biggest shift right away. In the first five minutes of the game, you were losing, and you were playing scared to lose the game. You need to come out tonight, I can't say it enough, with a fearlessness. You are the better team, especially if the Tampa Bay Lightning are without some of their massive core pillars of their team.
Mm-hmm.
You better run this team into the ground. I want to see Matthews and Marner play 25 minutes. I want to see them be the best players on the ice. It's a one-game sample size, but you have to win in dominant fashion.
You don't flinch ever putting Austin Matthews on the ice because he is the best, most dominant force in the game. And if you don't treat him like that, then maybe he won't be like that. It's on Austin Matthews to be that. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
You want to get paid more than Connor McDavid this summer. You want to get, like, the short-term contract so you can maximize your revenue or your profit every single year. You want to be on top of the world in terms of earning. Well, you got to do something in the playoffs. So show us. Go. You have the opportunity to be a made man here.
You know who else needs it? Because of the last couple years, is Mitch Marner cannot be the Mitch Marner, the postseason ghosts. Mm-hmm. He needs this game almost as much as Austin Matthews needs it. And he's getting a little tight in the media.
Mm.
You brought this point up. We listened to his post-game media. And yeah, you mean there's not like a clip that's like, oh my God, he told the reporters to shove it. But he's
got that Mitch Marner, things aren't going well vibe about him.
And you can't let that fester. He needs to get out there and he needs to be the second best player on the ice. He was the best player in the Maple Leafs all season long. Mm-hmm. Just forget that this is the playoffs and pretend it's the regular season if that's what matters to you. Because you can't have the conversation again be, what, in a week if the Maple Leafs don't pass through to the second round. Not a big game performer. Because that has been something we've talked about.
Not even,
be sick.
Not even big game. Not a playoff guy. A guy who's less than in the playoffs. A guy who's more his size.
Because that doesn't
playoffs.
Go away. That
a guy gets
lingers
pushed around
with you.
And can't get into those dirty areas. Mm-hmm. And can't come up clean with the puck. Like, Mitch Marner wasn't Mitch Marner. And maybe Mitch Marner, like, if it requires everyone to go up 2-3 notches, maybe his max is 1. You know, like, maybe he's a better regular season guy than he is a playoff guy. Like, I mean, if you look at the numbers, clearly he has been in his career. We need to see if he can elevate because he does not elevate enough and as much as he should.
Remember when he had to delete his social media last offseason? Like, this isn't like a light thing to be labeled. If you have another postseason where you are not an impact player,
mm-hmm.
It's hard to say you had the best. You had 99 points this year. You basically had 100 if you want to count that little fake one that everyone's trying to give you. Whatever. You were the best player in the Maple Leafs all season long. If you can't elevate in the playoffs, like, it starts to be a sinking level of doubt of who you are as a player. And we can't afford to have that for Mitch Marner.
We got Mike Rupp on a little later, and he's not shy with his opinions. And
I can't wait, not
to bait him, but I want to ask him, are there guys that are incapable of getting to the next level? But also, should we be totally evaluating players based on how they perform in the playoffs?
I kind of feel that
99
way.
99 points is nice. Like, I love it. Great regular season. Really fun. Sell a lot of tickets. Get a lot of, you know, like, it's really great for 6 months. But if it's going to be so that you cannot be better or you devolve as a player, you are worse as a player every time we get there, is that more valuable? Like, again, across the NHL, performance is going to another level.
Why do you think we already put Ryan O'Reilly in legendary status? He's a playoff performer. He's a Conn Smythe winner.
He didn't knock our socks off in the regular season. Came over, was like, okay, we feel good about
but
this.
But you have this
Stable.
Level of respect and understanding that he can elevate in the big moments.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that be the opposite where you're like, oh, this guy doesn't show up.
This entire team, this entire coaching staff, this entire management team, this entire organization has to show that it can elevate. And it never has. It never has. And I think we got to start like thinking about valuations and futures based on what we're seeing right now, small samples rather than large samples, because the large sample clearly doesn't translate or hasn't translated yet.
And what's the goal when you're a hockey player? Is it to have the best regular season of your life? Is it to be the President's Trophy champions? No, it's to win the damn Stanley Cup.
Is it 60 goals or is it Stanley Cup?
So that's how you evaluate, honestly. Like, if the Maple Leafs continue to have the best regular season year after year after year, I don't care anymore. It's about winning. So, yeah, I think you need to evaluate how good players are based on when they perform in the big moments. That's what makes you the difference between a good hockey player and a Hall of Famer, or a player that gets a contract extension that's decent or gets a monster max contract.
You said it quite literally with John Tavares. Like, if you want to go legacy, like, Hall of Fame status
depends on the balance. So.
Like, it's not one series for me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think John Tavares is a Hall of Famer right now.
No.
Like, you've won one series in your
career.
Why
would he be? Because of his Team Canada?
No, I mean, he's got good numbers. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's you know, one of the best players in the league for a 5-year run, like threatened Hart Trophy. He's not there yet.
No.
You win a Stanley Cup with Toronto Maple Leafs, yeah, you're probably gone. Win run round, no. He's one series victory in this guy's career. He's been around for a long time. The questions about elevation start with John Tavares.
All right, 7 p.m. tonight, Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. We're going to have all of this on Sportsnet. That will start the evening off, Sportsnet and CBC. Then at 7:30, you got Rangers and Devils in Game 2. That's on Sportsnet 360. Then 9:30, we've got the defending Stanley Cup champs, Colorado Avalanche, looking to bounce back from the Kraken, who came out strong. That's on Sportsnet now. And FX, getting spicy here with our throwing curveballs.
Mm-hmm.
And then nightcap, you got the Jets and the Golden Knights. That's on Sportsnet and CBC. So full night of hockey ahead. The Blue Jays are on a travel off day today before they head to New York to play the Yankees. And that'll be on Apple TV. So sorry about that.
Friday night. Yep.
So no Blue Jays baseball tonight. They did wrap up their series against the Astros last night. And it was going to be a great game. It was going to be a Jose Berrios win. Things were looking great. And the eighth inning came around. And the Blue Jays went from being down one run to losing 8-1 to the Astros. So they dropped two of three.
Quite a turn there.
Like, truly, it was in their grasp. And they kept showing Berrios on the bench because the story was Berrios. Like, he had a really great outing. You know, it has been the story of bad starts and redemption for most of these starting pitchers. And it's great to see. I couldn't cheer more for the guys to find their way into a level of comfortability. But they blew it in the eighth inning, and the game got out of hand. They had three opportunities. If I told you this, just out of context, okay? Bases are loaded, okay? You get three opportunities in the eighth inning. Zero outs.
Mm-hmm.
And you have George Springer, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the next three at bat. Would you feel confident that maybe you'd get some runs?
That you'd at least tie the game? Minimum tie the game? Yeah, I would. Yeah, I definitely
would. And that kind of becomes, unfortunately, they couldn't capitalize. And
it is unfortunate.
It's tough.
It's unfortunate, but I'm like, I can only really see positives from that game, because how often are you going to get Springer, Bo, Vlad with bases loaded, down one, and not at least tie the game and not win that game more often than not? So I'll say that's a bit of an anomaly. Bo Bichette who took the strike there. Bo and Vlad had violations and took strikes. Not the right time for Bo to take that. I think it was Bo in that moment. Really unfortunate that George Springer hammered a ball that was caught, and it was just like, okay.
I think it was like a 70% that wouldn't have happened elsewhere or something.
There you go.
The
ballpark stats are just like hot and heavy.
Let me get the ballpark stat for you.
Ballpark stats. I mean, it did go in someone's glove, not over a fence. So
a line drive with a 70% hit probability sizzled directly into Alex Bregman's glove.
Okay, so not specific to ballpark, but yes,
Shai Davidi.
Unfortunate you didn't take the lead or whatever there and it unraveled on you. But the most encouraging thing is, you know, you look at the score, 8-1 Jose Berrios start. God, right? Oh, boy.
No.
But Jose Berrios is great.
Seven innings pitched.
Yeah, Jose Berrios, seven innings. Not into the seventh inning. Got through seven innings. Three hits, two runs. Like, I think that's the most encouraging thing from it. And you're not going to win every series. I think this is the first series defeat since St. Louis in the opener or opening weekend. So, all told, I think it's been a really positive start that you're getting Berrios, that you're getting quality Berrios starts is as important a storyline as anything.
Big time.
So, hopefully, and again, he's been okay, that's a good one, and then it's complete blow up the next one. Obviously, you have to find some consistencies to feel really good about it, but I thought they played the Astros really well in Houston, and if you get
the defending World Series
champs
three
times, pretty good.
Like, this is not a Oakland Athletics, which did you see that they are going to basically buy a new stadium in Las Vegas?
It better have a roof on it. Imagine playing in Vegas in like
it's gonna be spicy
August.
Nonetheless, yes, Berrios making some positive strides. We're going to have Ben Nicholson-Smith join us at 7:30. We'll break down the series of the Astros in the last six series. We are already through six series here. Grade the start, see what's ahead for the Yankees. And the big thing is Alec Manoah is going to get his big moment against Gerrit Cole this weekend.
As much must watch as a late April game as you're going to get.
There
right?
you go. All right, we got the A-list. Then we've got Brent Gunning, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and Mike Rupp to finish off our day, our Wake and Rake, of course, at 8:45 today. So send in your picks at 590-590. That's all to come on the Fan Morning Show.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, talk about ultimate hockey guy.
Oh, tell me about that.
I don't love to glamorize injury, but Morgan Barron, you know him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone a little bit less familiar to me personally, as I don't watch too many Winnipeg Jets games.
Yeah, he's a little obscure.
Yeah. He got, honestly, he needs to count his lucky stars, because this guy almost had a maybe forever life-altering injury to his eyeball. There's a video. No, it's actually so scary. Like
it wasn't that close to his eye, was it? Was it kind of the side of the head?
It literally would have cut his eyeball out of his skull. So there's a scrum in front of the net. This was first game, Jets, Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to get the puck in the net. They're in the Golden Knights crease. And he kind of falls forward, and the skate goes in his visor and cuts the top of his eyelid to the side of his face.
Oh, was it his eyelid?
Sorry, eyebrow. Okay. Touching my eyebrow, but I said eyelid. And honestly, if it was a centimeter lower, he would have lost his eye on the ice.
Mm.
He skates off. He gets 75-plus stitches and comes back to the game with a cage on and a Band-Aid on. And it is honestly, I'm looking at it right now, less than an inch, maybe a centimeter from his eye. And he's asked post-game, they win. He's asked post-game, oh, what's going through your mind? Like, oh my God, you almost lost your eyeball. He goes, oh, I just wanted to know if the puck went in the net.
Wow.
Beauty.
Legend.
Literally, legend.
That guy.
That is so gross, though. Like, if you're squeamish, maybe don't go look, because 75 stitches to the side of your eyeball is not a pleasant thing, but, like, very glad that he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to have, like, nightmares of that happening. I don't know if I've ever said this on the radio. I might have said it with you before, but I used to have, like, an actual reoccurring dream, and this is dark, that I'd be down in the crease and I'd get, like, stepped on in
really?
The neck area. I don't know. It was a nightmare I used to have.
You still have that nightmare?
No. I'm going to have it tonight, probably now.
Anyway. I mean, at least with your career, you were able to put that to bed.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, the people that have recurring, like, I get, like, the university, I missed a deadline.
Recurring nightmare.
Yeah. I haven't.
Woof.
It's been many, many years.
I used to have the one where I'd, like, forget my skates, or, like, my coach would be like, get out on the ice, and I'd be using a right-handed stick, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Just go, and I'd be, like, an idiot. Or I'd be out there on, like, rollerblades or on, like, with Crocs on. Like, I just, like, there's always those stupid dreams that you have, and it's always, like, related to forgetting something or being thrown out on the ice with the wrong-handed stick, or you're wearing the wrong footwear.
Well, I'm glad you don't have the recurring hockey death one.
No, that's
like
wrong gear. That was dark.
Wrong gear. Like, you'll wake up and you'll be like bothered by it, but it won't be.
I would laugh.
It's not as graphic.
All right, one quick one for you. NBA voted on the most overrated player in the league. This is a anonymous vote through The Athletic.
Mm.
There's a whole article about it. And who do you think is the most overrated player based on what the players believe?
I bet it's not Luka Doncic.
It is not. Trae Young.
It's tough for the Atlanta Hawks, eh?
It is Trae Young. Who won? Most overrated player. 31% picked other, which to me, I'm like, I need to know who other is, because there's a long list of players. There's a Toronto Raptor in the top three.
It's got to be Pascal, right?
Top three goes Trae Young with 14.8%, and tied with our Hall of Famer, Julius Randle, is Pascal Siakam. The
tied
two of
for
them
two?
Tied for number two with 7.4% of the votes.
Listen, that's more of a stat than Trae Young. I don't care about the Atlanta Hawks.
Pascal Siakam, one of the most overrated players in the league, as viewed by
his not even like
peers.
And Raptors fans don't even think he's properly rated.
Yikes.
That's
best defender, Drew Holiday, by a long, long margin.
And he'll never get credit.
No. Don't see any Raptors on that list. Greatest player of all time, the GOAT debate. Michael Jordan, 58% of the votes.
Is 42 LeBron? Is it?
No, it's shared.
Is it binary? 33%.
Is it either or? 33% LeBron James and 6.8% Kobe.
Okay, Kobe.
Anyway, it's a very interesting article. I love when people have an opportunity to anonymously vote on their peers. The worst ref?
Scotty Foster?
Scott Foster. 25% of the votes, Scott Foster. There was 30% to other. Other shouldn't have been an option because, like, give me who other is.
Yeah, because if you just don't want to answer the question, you go other.
Scott Foster, 25%, and then Tony Brothers, 8%. Everyone knows who Scott Foster is. Everybody knows when it's a Scott Foster game or a Wes McCauley game.
It kind of sucks if you're Trey Young, like, all year now you go around.
Everybody thinks you're overrated.
Everyone thinks I'm the worst. I'm the worst star in the league. I mean, it sucks.
It does suck.
Everywhere you go. And, like, you guys don't think I'm very good.
It's brutal. Well, we kind of know who Bunting might think is the worst ref. Or Leafs Nation might think who's the worst ref. I don't know who the reffing lineup is tonight. Do you think we see the same refs all series long?
How does this work? I don't think they go back-to-back, do they?
They fly in a new crew tonight?
I wouldn't be surprised if old Wes shows up for a Game 7, though.
Oh, my God. Gunner, the biggest fan of Michael Bunting, joins us on the other side of the break. How does he spin the 3-game suspension for his...
Can you even spin?
Scarborough boy, or is this the end of the gunning love for Michael Bunting? That's next.